Yo, it's Jey Uso from WWE.
And I'm Jimmy Uso.
Chumba Casino and WWE are hyped for the biggest event of the summer. SummerSlam.
I know, I can't wait.
There's nothing better to do while we're waiting.
Than playing Chumba Casino.
Sign up today and you could win a VIP experience.
With Chumba Casino and WWE for SummerSlam.
So what are you waiting for?
Play Chumba Casino and enter for your chance to win.
Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
And we are live. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. I am one of your co-hosts, Blake Ruffino. Alongside me is my counterpart and co-host, Joe DeLeon. Good evening, good sir. How are you?
I'm doing great. Mentally preparing myself for Thursday, the first round of the 2026 NFL draft. But other than that, Blake, I am doing fantastic.
I am not doing fantastic.
Why?
I'm so glad you asked me as to why I'm not doing fantastic. Because here is the truth. Name someone that is going out there begging for a 2014 playoff.
When we get to that.
Oh, no, we're just coming out to shoot with it. We're coming out to shoot
all right,
with
you
it.
You want to just jump right in?
You're goddamn Skippy. I'm ready to do it. Because the president, with all due respect, put together. All right. Let me settle down. So okay. In case you missed it, there's a presidential committee that the College Football Playoff Committee that's also involved that of the inevitable. Joe, they are suggesting of the presidential committee, the College Football Playoff, to expand the playoff to 24 teams. Obviously, this has been on the horizon for quite some time. The SEC has denied it. They do not want to go to it. They want to go to 16 teams to preserve the regular season. And yet, Joe, here we are with a committee of people who didn't even understand a month ago while in the White House what was going on. They didn't understand the House settlement case. They didn't understand NIL. And yet here we are with a presidential committee and a Republican strategist, by the way, a lifelong politician talking about a 2014 playoff. President Trump was on Fox News this morning and stated that he doesn't even understand the NIL concept. This is not to be a political show. However, this is college football, and here we go. Joe, I am to the point where I'm just like, it is what it is. You know why? Because me and you get paid more money now. Congratulations, my good man. More playoff games means more money for you and I. It also means more money for ESPN. But this is hurting the sport. This is hurting the sport. And I do not agree with a 2014 playoff expansion.
So Ross Dellinger had reported on this, the 14-person presidential media committee. It has the commissioners of all the power conferences in it, including the American Conference, as well as Pete Bavakwa, who is the Notre Dame athletic director. But some of the other members include ESPN Fox executives, Gary Cardinal and David Blitzer, who are business magnates is how they're referred to. Boris, the Republican political strategist that you referenced earlier. And of course, Cody Campbell is involved with this as well. The committee is who most of the usual figures that we have, but my big red flag out of this, Blake, where my eyebrows perked up and I looked, oh, this is a serious issue. Dellinger's piece talked about how the 2014 playoff is gaining more steam, and it's gaining steam amongst the Big Ten and the SEC, them being the decision makers here, being the ones who have to make the decision to go to that level of expansion. But it seems like there's momentum amongst those two power brokers. I was very off put by the detail, and this was written in the article. The presidential committee identified a variety of ways that the industry can generate more revenue to help financially stressed schools. One of those, expand the playoff 24 teams. That was the immediate, like, oh, hell no. Hell no. We're talking about all these ways and we're trying to evaluate, all right, how do we make college athletics more sustainable across the board? And we're trying to find ways to help these schools. This is the last place that we need to be doing it. Why? That shouldn't be the reason for expanding. We expanded the playoff. Money was obviously part of the decision. But Blake, those that clamored for a 4-team and maybe the 12-team playoff were pushing for the fact that it opened the competition. it made it a more competitive environment so that we could get more competitive teams. The reason why we've been staunch against the expansion to 16 and especially 24 is we've pointed out that 12 teams is the perfect number. When we get to 16, it is a convoluted mess of too many teams, many four of which would not be qualified to actually be there. 24, even worse. Blake, if we're purely making this decision because of schools being freaked out and fearing that they won't be able to financially stay afloat, we have completely, completely lost the plot, and we are completely and utterly cooked.
Hoosier Dave, you can get out of here because it has nothing to do with watching college football. Because you just won a national title, it doesn't mean that you know that Indiana knows what the regular season is about, especially when you're canceling P4 games in the beginning of the season. Joe, college football is unique because of the simple nature that college football games in the regular season matter. They matter. That is, the intensity grows every single week because the games matter. We have talked about this, Joe, nonstop for 3 years. Name somebody that's wanting it. You're having two institutions that are coming together and expanded a playoff for money. And now, at least the presidential committee, whatever it is pulling the Band-Aid off of it and telling you exactly what it is that they think. At least they're not hiding behind the fact of that it's not about money. It is about money. It always has been about money. So what happens to the regular season then? What happens to a team that's 8-4 or 9-3? It doesn't matter anymore. So what built the sport? What built the sport was two teams that are 7-1 going into week 9, and you go into a week 9 game, and if that team wins, they still have a chance to make it to a playoff. The team that loses is out, and you're going to come in here and tell me that, oh, it's still going to matter? Where? Because at the end of the day, it doesn't matter. You can still make it to a playoff. You go 9-3, you can make it into a playoff. No, who's asking for expansion, by the way? Can you point? We did a poll. I don't know if you remember this. Over 5,000 people voted on it. Now, it's not a lot of people, but it's still resounding. 5,500 people voted on that poll. 98% said they didn't want for there to be expansion to 24. I mean, if you did a poll and somebody came out, I would really like to see what the actual poll would be. There's nobody advocating for you to do it, and then you're just coming here, well, schools need to make more money. Really, they need to make more money. Because that's interesting, because I could look at like audits from like LSU where they had a gross profit of over $200 million. You have schools in TV contracts worth $70-plus million. $70 million. Oh, well, we have to give $20 million to the students. We have to give $20 million to the student athletes. Then what are you doing with $50 million? Are we legitimately understanding what we're talking about here? Where's $50 million going from the SEC schools? $50 million a year that you're not having to pay for them? Please tell me. And then they come out with this BS audit saying, well, money's going here, money's going there. Well, great job for hiring accountants. Great job. What happens when you go Saturday night under the lights? So, again, it is getting to a place where these colleges and institutions are saying, we don't have the money. Really, you didn't have the money. Joe, how many coaches got fired this offseason or during the season? How many?
I don't know off the top of my head.
Do you think it's double digits? It's at least 10, right? It's at least 10.
Sure.
Okay. Were they worried about money?
No.
Was Penn State, was LSU, was A&M 3 years ago with Jimbo Fisher, were they worried about money?
Well, I think that this statement is directed towards not the programs that do have the money to throw around, which is why this is even stupider. It's less to do with the programs that are the blue bloods that can pay to remove a coach for $50 million. This I'm reading into as the hoverers that are on the cusp of being in the middle of the pack of their conferences or the back end that financially can't support themselves doing revenue sharing. But this is this is my whole point why this is bullshit. We're talking about expanding the playoff for the chance that the teams that can't financially support themselves to maybe get into the playoff field and for them to get a portion of the money from the other teams that get into the playoff from their conference. Like that is beyond stupid.
Can you name a middle of the team field or a middle of the field team? Just name
UVA. UVA is a decent example.
Okay.
Because they're usually like the middle of the pack of the ACC or they're at the bottom.
What are they doing with $50 million worth of TV contracts? What are they doing with $40 million worth of TV contracts? A $40 million, you can't figure it out with $40 million? They need more money? $40 million? Like, are we understanding what we're talking about here?
Mm-hmm.
Like, do we understand what we're talking about? They need more money. I understand everybody needs more money. You know who needs more money? Me. I need more money too. Everybody needs more money. Expanding the playoff is going to hurt the regular season, which built the sport, and you forgot about that because of a bottom line dollar. I got to be real with you. Tony Battiti, Greg Sankey, everybody that's involved in this, shame on you.
Chris Lowe actually just put out a piece that like right as we went live.
Okay.
Of getting, I'm not going to quote from it right now because I haven't a chance to read it, but it was pulling from coaches and about the expansion, and Kyle Whittingham is the main quote that they use at the front of the tweet. 16 is the right number, but only in a super conference structure. You govern yourselves. The NCAA is not involved and you have your own commissioner. What are we doing here?
That makes no sense. What do you mean in a super conference in the NCAA have governance? This is not a shot at On3. This is not a shot at Creslow. Why do you keep asking coaches? They don't know.
I'm tired of coaches getting opinions on this stuff.
They don't. You know why? The schedule is their schedule. And their schedule got messed up.
This was something that was referenced in Ross's piece. I'm going to see if I can find the exact quote. But in the portion that I mentioned earlier that there is momentum growing in the SEC and the Big Ten, the quote wasn't from Sankey. It wasn't from a real decision maker. It said that there is growing support from athletic directors and from coaches. I'm trying to find the
exact. There it is.
Oh, wait. Here it is. As it turns out on Wednesday here, the CFP has allotted a large chunk of time to discuss playoff expansion, though no decision is expected this week. Among the SEC's football coaches and athletic directors, there are public and private signals of support for a 24-team playoff. So it's the coaches that want it.
So basically what you're saying is that you have a bunch of athletic directors that want and need more money and a bunch of coaches that make more money if they make the playoff when it's expanded. So this is what we're not doing. We're not talking to the fans. We're not thinking about the regular season and the impacts that it does to the regular season. Name a fan that wants it. So you keep going to these coaches. National articles keep coming out. We asked Coach X about what he thinks of an expanded playoff. Well, it's great. It's great. We need to do it. You go to Eli Drinkwitz. You go to Josh Heupel. You go to all of these coaches and ask them. Well, they get paid more money if there's an expanded playoff. Have you asked the fan? Have you asked the fan? So when we get into a situation where you keep expanding, Joe, when's it going to stop? Because you haven't stopped. You haven't even gotten to 3 years of a 12-team playoff. This is a joke. This is a flat-out joke. It's building with athletic directors and coaches. Well, then guess what? Maybe they shouldn't make the decisions. Maybe there should be an adult in the room to actually make a decision. We cannot continue to expand and think that the regular season playoff is going to be worth a damn. Because that's what it is, a regular season playoff. It's what you call it. So if you're going to continue to expand this thing when fans are constantly asking you to stop, then you're going to run fans off.
Yeah, I think that it's very clear that those that are asking for this are the ones that are the most desperate. And Blake, this is the reality that comes with this, and this might be misconstrued the wrong way, but at the end of the day, when there's as many Power Four teams as there are across college football, it is impossible for all of those teams to be in the green.
No doubt.
Just literally impossible. This isn't the NFL. This isn't the NBA. This isn't a professional sports league where there are 30 to 32 teams and where there is the ability to produce balance across those teams in terms of the money that those franchises get. Those that succeed and do better, maybe have richer owners that are able to throw money a little bit around more in order to spend at the beginning to make more money, whatever it might be. But Blake, because we have so many teams, it increases the likelihood that there is disparity. And I think that there is this fallacy amongst presidents and athletic directors that those that think that they should be making more money believe that it's possible, when in reality, not every team is going to be able to make the same. Not every single team is going to be in striking distance of Alabama, or for that matter, the middle of the pack teams in their conferences. It's just a pill that we have to swallow, that the teams in the back end of conferences that have historically been in the back end of conferences that do not fund athletics the way that the others do, because they don't put as much of a premium on it as the other programs do. They mostly believe that there's value in having good athletics because it helps with admissions. If you're not going to treat athletics seriously, you can't expect a handout through an expanded college football playoff in order to keep your budget in check. That is what this is.
Exactly. And it's exactly what Heupel was doing when he was asked about the expanded playoff. Is exactly what Eli Drinkwitz was doing when he was asked about an expanded playoff. And let me ask you this question. Why is it that the SEC is going to get $65 to $70 million when Missouri doesn't bring the eyeballs that Bama or LSU or A&M do? Why are you getting the same amount of money? Why is it that Oregon is getting the same amount of money as Rutgers? Why is that? So you want to keep talking about equality and bringing things into the center. It's not in the center. Nobody's watching more of, excuse me for saying this because I know you're a Jersey guy, but you know this as well as I do. Nobody's watching Rutgers more than they're watching Oregon. Nobody
you don't know that.
No, that's BS. Nobody's watching the University of Kentucky football more than they're watching Alabama. It's not happening. And so they're having to split the pot. Joe, Google it right now. It's $70 million for the SEC's contract, TV contract. $70 million. And you keep telling me you need more. By the way, you're paying $20 million to kids. What are you doing with the $50 million? Please tell me, because let me tell you something that's not. Scholarships don't cost $50 million. Well, we got to keep the lights on. $50 million worth? Who do you think you kidnapped? Chelsea Clinton? That's a Rush Hour reference. But at the same time, it gets to a point where, well, everybody's got to make more money. The worst thing that they did, the worst thing that Sankey, the worst thing that Petiti, the worst thing that all of them did was that they got the government involved. They got the government involved. And now the government's going to screw you. Because now everybody wants expansion. No, Joe, nobody wants it. Not really. The majority of the fans don't want it. So here we go. Here we go. Conference championships are gone. I mean, it's over with. Everything that we knew and loved about college football, screw the payment system, screw the money. In reference to a regular season that mattered, in reference to teams being 7-1 and battling it out, and whoever wins is going to a playoff, and the other one, well, sorry about you. And even in the expanded playoff, Joe, how many times in this 12-team playoff did you have two lost teams that are battling it out in the end? Are you going to sit here and tell me that Texas versus Texas A&M at the end of the season meant nothing? Are you going to sit here and tell me that South Carolina versus Clemson 2 years ago meant nothing?
Well, so I think that the biggest
– sorry, go ahead.
Sorry. No, Fisher, what were you going to say?
I was going to say, and when you expand it, guess what happens?
That it's devalued. It's completely devalued. I think that the last bit with this is that of all the things that people claim to have turned them away from the sport or that they don't like about the sport with the transfer portal and NIL and now revenue sharing and all that stuff. If there is something that college football fans should put their foot down on, it should be a 2014 playoff because it is, it's a monstrosity. I mean, even the NFL that's too damn big. And you have way less to pull from in the NFL for the pool of player teams that they currently have. And that is not an example that we should be looking to for what college football should be doing. 16 is where I absolutely will stop this discussion because at the very least that would remove the buys, which has been long considered to be a disadvantage for the top teams for the last 2 years that we've done this. But I will keep saying it as someone who watches FCS football closely and as two people who played FCS football, 2014 playoff does not produce any competitive matchups. It doesn't. No. You just end up with all this, the top eight teams end up making it to the final eight and the top three of the top four teams usually make it to the final four. And you usually have two of the top three teams make it to the national championship.
Can I tell you the 19 through 25 to end the season last year?
What was it?
James Madison, USC, Michigan, Houston, Navy, North Texas, TCU.
Navy was ranked?
Yeah. The last Associated Press, there were 12-2 record. Guess how many teams in the top 24 had four losses?
Got to be at least five.
Five.
And I would include a G5 teams in there because
you had,
G5
is you had Iowa, you had Southern Cal, you had Michigan, and you had TCU. And then if you want to count, I mean, I'm kind of being disparaging here. If you want to count, some of the teams on the outside in, I would count five because you did have Georgia Tech there at the end or Illinois. But at the bottom line, you, Joe, have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. You have 11 teams in the top 24 that have three losses or more.
It's too many. None of those teams are as the opening conversation point of what the purpose of expansion was to create a window for all the teams that might be capable of winning a national championship to insane. Be within striking distance. None of those teams are.
No, I lied. It was five. Bama okay. had four losses too. You had Bama, Southern Cal, Michigan, Iowa, and TCU all in the top 25 that had four losses at the end of the season.
Well, technically not Bama because Bama wouldn't have had four losses if they didn't play in the SEC championship game and one of those was
correct, but they still did. But they still did. I mean, they still did at the end of this. I mean, we're going to have debates about Southern Cal, Michigan. Joe, are you really going to sit here and tell me that Houston, Navy, North Texas, and TCU deserved a spot, and that's the argument that we're going to be? It devalues the regular season. It devalues it. So yeah. Let me point it to you this way. Okay? Now, the argument will be, well, it will make teams play tougher opponents earlier in the season. Will it? You're already canceling them. I mean, because if you lose to Ohio State in week one, it doesn't really matter, does it? So if you do it, you better put up premier matchups in week one. And I'm talking about, as an example, I want to see Ohio State versus Miami week one. I want to see Alabama versus Notre Dame week one. I want to see Texas Tech versus LSU week one.
Wait, I think that you're bringing up a really good point here, and this goes in line with the idea that I've constantly pitched on this show. I think that the complete, utter miss that is happening with this is you're trying to find ways to put more money into college athletics, and one of the things that was brought up was the first few weeks of the season, there's not very many premier matchups. Instead of looking towards expanding the college football playoff to increase the amount of urgent matchups that people are going to watch. Why are we not? The better solution, Blake, would be to establish scheduling agreements between conferences to force the top teams to play one another in the first month of the season. I've said this numerous times. The college football playoff should establish a requirement where you should have to play one team in every single conference. There should be some sort of a rotation, kind of like how the NFL does it. There are ways to go about this. But if the way that we stop this nonsense with teams canceling opponents, with tough opponents, other Power Four opponents on their resumes, and all that crap, the first month of the season should be a month of competition. It should be a month where you get your one FCS opponent, your one G5 opponent, but you have to play the other Power Four teams. Instead of us looking to expand to 24, where those matchups will be a bunch of bullshit, why not increase the drama at the beginning of the year where I think that you're going to have the most eyes? And it's proven by the fact that you get a lot of attention in the month of August, months of August and September, based on the fact that our most viewed month in the last 3 years of doing the show has always been August, more than December, more than January, more than December when the transfer portal opens and when signing day happens. Like, I think that there is a real thought here.
This past year, January was pretty nice.
Yeah. Okay. Well, yeah. Like, I think that there's a real thought here that they're seeing a problem and they're looking at the wrong solution. There's solution at hand.
Well, hold on. You know why, to your point? Because there's nobody who really knows what they're doing at the top. You have a political Republican strategist that's in the room trying to dictate about college football. And quite frankly, everybody keeps, I hate to say it like this, but everybody keeps saying Cody Campbell this, Cody Campbell that. What does Cody Campbell do other than give his university?
I'm tired of hearing about Cody Campbell. I got to be honest with you. I'm kind of with Brent Yormark here. Every time I see Cody Campbell, I keep thinking to myself, what qualified him to become? He's like suddenly become the commissioner of college football. He's turning into the commissioner of college football
because he's got a shitload of money. College football fans, here's what's going on. Everybody in all of your schools want to make more money. Well, Blake, how is that a problem? Well, it's not a problem, but they're going to coaches and asking coaches what they think. The last time that you went out there and asked coaches about what they thought, they said that they wanted to do this past year's schedule. Well, what happened? That schedule completely blew up in their face, and then they tried to change it. Then they didn't. The one problem that you had, you didn't change it. And now you're going to a guy who's an oil tycoon who's going and saying, we need to do X, we need to do Y, we need to do Z. Says who? Says who? So that you can get more teams in for your conference? Why? Missouri, it does not deserve to get the same amount of money that Alabama does. With all due respect to Texas Tech, neither does Texas Tech. Just because you're funding them doesn't mean that they deserve the viewership and the money that everybody is getting. Bottom line. So when you look at this in a whole, in a prism, well, coaches want to do it. Well, coaches wanted the schedule and it blew up in their face. It blew up completely in their face. Until you get a commissioner, a real commissioner that can dictate what is going on, this will continue to happen. Yeah. Expanding the playoff. It's a joke. It is a joke. You devalue the biggest strength that you had. College football fans, do you want to know your superpower? Is that every single week mattered. You valued every single week. Well, the NFL does this. You're not the NFL. There's not 32 teams. Joe, you have 32 teams in the two biggest conferences that you play in. So don't come to me and try to tell me, well, the NFL this, the NFL that. This isn't the NFL. Everybody keeps trying to tell me, well, the soccer league, this isn't fucking Europe.
Well, and if anything, the big bit with the Premier League or whatnot, I don't know enough about it, but there is ridiculous disparity across the board amongst the top brands and the have-nots. That there's such gigantic disparity. If anything, that is a good example to look towards because it's laughable, the separation between the top teams and the worst ones.
They tried to bring in equality. They tried. And they did some of these similar things. And you know what happened? Do you know what happened? The bigger teams got bigger.
Yeah, we need to stop pretending that it's a It's a possibility.
They want you. This is the last thing because we got so much we need to get into. You're literally trying to bring equality for a sport that shows people who are not equals.
It doesn't make any sense. None of it makes sense.
It makes zero sense. All right. Nevertheless, we're alive. Everyone, I'm pissed. Everyone do us a favor. By hitting the like and share, show to all those groups. If you're on Facebook, it's all those social media pages. You're watching us, listening to us on YouTube. Like, subscribe, notification bell, wherever you listen to podcasts. Rate, review, and subscribe. Every Ruffino and Joe show is brought to you our good friends over at FanDuel. Download the FD Sports Baguette today. Use your mobile device in doing so. Joe, do you want to get to Florida?
Yeah, let's get to Florida. I know that we didn't get to talk show order before the show, but let's get to Florida.
Joe, the team that I've been talking about as the sneakiest team of all this offseason, you guess it, the Florida Gators. I know I've made this offseason maybe some outlandish statements to some, but as tonight we start digging deep into the Florida Gators, Joe, I am enamored by this team, and I think that they could be very good in year one under John Summerall. When you look at the Florida Gators firing Billy Napier and then bringing in John Summerall, how do you see year one under John Summerall with the Florida Gators going down?
Yeah, Blake, I think that there are some glaring issues with this Florida team that we need to unpack here in this discussion. And it's not even the one that many people would assume, which is their quarterback battle that's going on right now. I actually think that they've got a good problem ahead for them. I think that you've got a quarterback who knows the system in Aaron Filo and Tremell Jones, who's played better than anyone would have thought and was proven to be a true gamer. And either way, if one guy starts and struggles, it seems like they could turn to somebody else and have a pretty steady-handed quarterback. Like, the big bit for me before we talk positives, I have zero idea what to expect from this Florida offensive line. They're losing a lot of players. Two of its best players move on to the NFL with Slaughter and Barber getting drafted in this year's class. One quote when I was reading up on some expectations after the spring on Swamp 247, I was reading before the show, this one quote from Summerall really caught my attention. And this was in regard to the offensive line battle and who Summerall was talking about would start at left or right tackle. Those guys have to have a freaking great summer or we got no chance. Like, no chance. I think we have a chance. We got guys in that room that can do it. But there's got to be a lot of growth that continues to happen, and they will. It's going to happen. But we're nowhere near settled in that room. Like, at the end of the day, we understand how coaches operate. They say things like this because they're trying to light a fire underneath the ass of their guys. You're going into the summer. What happens during the summer? You're waking up early as shit. You're doing conditioning. You're going to weightlifting. You'll do some on-field work with your teammates separate from the coaches because they're not allowed to be out there. It is just a grind. You might take a class or two. This is an effort to get the offensive linemen that need to physically develop more to hit it hard over the next couple of months. But, Blake, this is still a very glaring signal here that Summerall even recognizes that offensive line is a major hole for them. Because, Blake, at the end of the day, they've got some really good bodies and some pieces along their defensive line. They have a really underrated linebacker room. Their secondary is underrated as well. I think that Cormani McClain started to show that he's living up to his billing as a former five-star kid. Agreed. They've got some serious dudes at receiver with Dallas Wilson and Vernell Brown. And Jaden Ball is freaking Jaden Ball and can rush for another 1,300 yards because he is going to be one of the top running backs in the country and potentially a first-round pick. But, Blake, I think the starting point has to be here for this Florida team is their offensive line could be what holds them back.
It could be, and that can be a main concern. But the wide receiver position that you just talked about, Dallas Wilson, if he returns, we all saw the glimpses last year of what he can be. Micah Mays was the guy that you brought in who had a big spring. We already know about Eric Singleton and Vernell Brown, but you brought in Bailey Stockton. Joe, the offensive line of what you're talking about in reference to, you got Egan at left tackle, Moore at center, Strahan at right guard. Does Caden Jones live up to the billing at right tackle? You have a new quarterback. Those are all the questions that or I mean, because look, you can't really do anything if you just have a team that's built with unreal wide receivers. Mm-hmm. However, is Tramell Jones going to win that starting job? Because, I mean, if the spring is any indication, he could. That part I don't know. What I do know is that you have a team with unreal individualized talent. What Billy Napier does not get enough credit for is that he recruited at a very high level. I just don't know if I see, however, a team in Florida and John Summerall that's going to be weak along both lines of scrimmage. I don't know if I can believe that. Now, in year one, I'm sure that they can struggle. But that is a lot of bodies up front that you're having to readjust. So the offensive line and what you do at quarterback is going to be interesting. But you brought in Pryor to back up a ball. You brought in Montgomery to back up ball. Do they give you anything? Or how downhill are you going to be? But you got an unreal weaponry at wide receiver. You brought in Harpring at tight end. You have Jackson that's still there. There's a lot of things that you can do. The bottom line question is, offensively, you have the dudes, and you have a really good play caller, one of the better play callers. And I thought that he showed a lot in that spring game, ironically, to what some may believe. I do agree with you this, the offensive line, what are they going to be able to do? But defensively, Joe, you're right. They brought in Coleman. They brought in Dooley. You return Carmani McClain. You bring back Bett. You bring back Lyons. You bring back Woods. You bring back Miles Graham, who I think is a really good linebacker. You got a lot of pieces defensively, and we know that Summerall can scheme that part up. It really does come down to what you brought up. It really does come down to that defensive line. I mean, that offensive line, excuse me.
The offensive line is going to, I think, make or break them, but Blake, we've alluded to this a couple of times that they actually, I'll come out and say this, but before I get to my point there, I think that they might have a top five wide receiver room in the SEC.
In reference to talent, let's go a little bit further. I think they have a top three.
I'd have to sit and go through and think about who they
I think LSU's is up with. There. I really do. I think Jackson Harris is a dog. That's a whole different conversation for
it's
a different.
It's not better than Texas's.
It's not better than Texas's, but name another.
Well, yeah, Georgia's kind of weak and they don't match up. Alabama is a question mark because Ryan Williams is pretty underwhelming. At least top four. Maybe we're missing somebody, but.
No,
not only
Randy, I mean A&M, no. Maybe A&M, maybe like A&M.
Yeah, actually, yeah, I think we'd have to slide A&M over Florida in this situation.
I mean, I don't think it's Oklahoma. I think the real truth is in any order of the debate that you would have, so in some form or fashion, Texas, Florida, A&M, LSU.
Yeah, yeah, I think that's a fair iteration to look at it, but that's. To my point, we're also one of the guys that we haven't really talked about, Eric Singleton. I love the fact that he's reunited with Faulkner. He didn't really do a whole lot when he was at Auburn, not to his fault because Arnold was just
nobody did anything at Auburn.
Yeah, yeah, he was just so booty that he didn't have anyone good throwing him the football, so it was kind of hard for him to perform well. But his best season came 2 years ago when he was playing for Buster Faulkner. And now he's got really good teammates around him, although he had Cam Coleman with him last year. I think there's a chance for Eric Singleton to be better featured this upcoming season and to reemerge as a possible top 50 NFL draft pick if things go well. He was going to declare and probably go top 100 this year. That trio makes them dangerous. I think even if their offensive line struggles, it allows for them to upset somebody that they're not supposed to beat. The end of the day, they have a really, really hard schedule. But the separation and the change happens if their offensive line performs better than we're talking about at the current moment, because we're being a little bit doom and gloom as we're talking here. If that offensive line is steady and they've got these receivers, they can realistically win 8 games. That's how I'm seeing this. That trio is so good, even with an average level quarterback, I think that they could end up knocking off teams that they're not supposed to, multiples of them. But if the O-line's getting its ass kicked, as we see all the time in college football and especially in the SEC, if your offensive line's not good, run game's not going to be very good, your young, inexperienced quarterback is not going to play very well, and it is going to be a slippery, slippery slope.
I don't think Philo can lead you to 8 games. I think Tramell Jones is the only one that can.
I think I agree with that. I think I agree with that.
I mean, what are you trying to do? If they run Philo out there, this is what you're telling me, okay? What you're telling me is that you're going to want to be a downhill run first football team. So then what do you do with the 3 Megatrons out wide? Because I don't know if Philo can get them the ball effectively enough. I don't. I don't know that. I legitimately don't know that. I saw Tramell Jones do it. I saw him do it to Singleton on a deep drag. I saw him hit, and by the way, we're talking about the big 3. I haven't forgot about Mays. I haven't forgot about him. He had a hell of a spring game. I have not forgot about him at all. So again, I just bring up the situation. You might have one of the more talented wide receiver rooms. You're going to have to find a way to give your guy time. And I think that they can. But is Philo going to be the one that leads you there? I don't know. I don't know if I'm there yet. Now, defensively, yes, I'm almost done. Okay, I'm almost done. Okay. However, defensively, I do think that we're in a situation with them. Joe, I don't know if they're not going to be really freaking good in their front 7. I'm not 1,000% sold that they're not going to be really good there. I like Lions. I like Bet. I like James. I like Woods. Joe, defensive front 7's not what hurt them last year.
No.
I think they brought in some decent pieces in their front 7. Bullard and Lowry are 2 other guys that they brought in from the transfer portal. They brought in Clark and Coleman. Joe, I'm not 1,000% sold. I get that you're losing Caleb Banks, but Caleb Banks wasn't there last year. I mean, Caleb Banks didn't play for you. I mean, Tyreek Sapp is a big loss, right? I like Sapp a lot. He was a really good defender. I'm not sure that if some of these guys on the edge aren't going to be just as good for you. I really like Jaden Woods. I really do. So I guess we'll see moving forward, Joe. But at the end of the day of this, before we get to their schedule, I think that Florida is the team that I am the most intrigued by in the SEC. It's not everybody keeps talking about Kentucky, 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 Kentucky. And I get it. I truly get it. Kentucky ain't got those 3 dudes, 4 dudes out wide. They don't have ball in the backfield. If Tramell Jones can beat out Philo, I think that the sky's the limit for him. And I like Caden Jones at right tackle. I really do. They're an intriguing, interesting team, brother. They're a very intriguing and interesting team.
They absolutely are. To me, they're a little bit volatile. I think
I don't disagree with that either.
What we've brought up. I'm going to read off their schedule. I'm going to look at this in a little bit of a different light than we typically do when I read off these matchups, because I typically do games that should be wins, tough matchups, which are games that they probably could win, but are a bit of a toss-up, and then toss-up or could go either way, and then toss-up games are the games that are 50-50. I don't see very many toss-up games on here. So the should-be wins are FAU, Campbell, and Vanderbilt. The games that I think are going to be challenges, I think that should be a win. You're going to get – all right, fine. We'll take that out. I think I actually meant to put that in the next category. I think I put that in the wrong spot. The games that I think they are capable of winning but are going to be really, really hard matchups are Vanderbilt at Auburn versus South Carolina, at Kentucky, at Florida State. The games that are likely losses but potential for upsets, Ole Miss at Missouri, at Texas, neutral site against Georgia, and then they get Oklahoma at home. Those are 5 really hard freaking games, man. And in order for them to get the 8 wins, they're going to need to pull off an upset against one of those teams. And they're also going to need to not drop a stupid game, like lose to a South Carolina at home lose to a Kentucky on the road, they're going to need to be pretty buttoned up.
I mean, starting in October, what is Austin Simmons? Joe, what is Austin Simmons?
We don't really know.
We don't really know. What is Lenora Sellers with Kendall Briles?
We don't. With that had when we did the South Carolina preview,
last time we saw Kendall Briles with a dude that has the same skill set, but at a Lenora's is at a much higher ceiling. They won 9 games in the SEC. Did Arkansas?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Then you got Texas on the road. Then you got Georgia in the cocktail party. You got 2 weeks to get involved in that or be ready for that. Then you have Oklahoma. Then you are going to Kentucky. What is Will Stein? Then Vanderbilt and Florida State. They have a lot. This is why I'm so intrigued by them, because here's the truth. If John Mateer and Oklahoma are the same, I think that they could beat Oklahoma. If South Carolina and Shane Beamer keep doing what they're doing, Joe, they can beat them. Austin Simmons might not be ready, and you can go on the road and beat them. You also can lose all those games.
I know. That's why volatility is the word here for Florida. I think that here's – if we were to stamp a projection, which we haven't really totally done in these previews, this is how I would – classify Florida. I see Florida as you have talked about them throughout this entire preview. They have the opportunity.
Oh, by the way, I'm sorry. I missed Ole Miss.
Oh, well, Ole Miss is a game that they could totally steal, but
They ain't beating Ole Miss. They can't
score. I think their home games, the Ole Miss game and the Oklahoma game, to me, are their two best chances to pull out unexpected upsets. It's probably not going to happen. I don't find it likely to happen, because we've talked about how Oklahoma is a team that could sneakily get into the SEC championship game, and Ole Miss has turned into Chambliss. So even if the rest of this roster is wonky and all over the place, and Pete Golding's doing a real shit job in his first year, there's a chance that we still see Trinidad go off. But Blake, Florida, the way that I look at this is they have the opportunity to be the unexpectedly scrappy team that sneaks up on teams that are not expecting it. The biggest key for Florida this upcoming year should be to accomplish that. Because if you are capable of winning 7 games, pull out an 8th, and accomplish that this season, you have a lot of momentum with the right recruiting class in 2027 to finally build what you've been trying to build, which is be a 9-10 win team.
Joe,
come on, guys.
Come on, bro. They don't suck. You know who doesn't suck? Trinidad Chambliss. And you don't have a quarterback like him.
Even if they're bad, Like I said, even if they're not bad, is not the word I want to use. Even if they're all over the place, Trinidad will keep them afloat.
Oh, Kawan Lacy will keep them afloat.
Yeah.
And they're going to be good defensively. Don't do that to yourself. Don't do it to yourself. All right. Oh, gosh.
Sorry, we're getting distracted with a...
Yeah, we got... Oh, it's pretty distraction-worthy. Joe, before we get out of here, the College Football Playoff Selection Committee is... They're thinking of changing how they do the shows and how they announce, correct?
Did you... I was wondering, because we spent so much time talking about college football, did you want to talk about... do you want to talk about Ashton Daniels instead?
I'm so glad that you asked me to do that one. Okay. So Ashton Daniels has been named the starter at Florida State because, you know, Mike Norvell can't let a competition happen, because of course he can't. Joe, what are your thoughts on Ashton Daniels at Florida State getting the nod and being the head guy at quarterback?
He, I am like really, really torn on this, Blake, because part of me feels that this is going to be a complete and utter dud. If we look at his total sample size, and by the way, there was nobody else that was going to beat him out. He was the best player coming in. We should have assumed it. If we look at his sample size, now that this is established and confirmed of his entire career as a player, in 23 career games, he's thrown for 4,700 yards, rushed for a little under 1,400, and has 35 total touchdowns. He has a lot of turnovers, though. Last season at Auburn, he had a 57% completion percentage, 797 yards, 3 touchdowns, 2 interceptions, 280 rushing yards, 2 rushing touchdowns. He hasn't exactly been a good starting quarterback. He had a couple of spurts at Stanford. But this is where I'm torn, because there was one game where it all came together. And there's not a lot of quarterbacks that can say that they can accomplish what Ashton Daniels did against Vanderbilt last year. He had, in that game against Vanderbilt, 353 passing yards, 89 rushing yards, 4 total touchdowns, no interceptions. If you can capably get like 60% of that, there's a path forward here. You know, there's a path for them being scrappy and them doing some damage in the ACC. And as we have talked about here a little bit, when we talked about him being on the hot seat, Norvell, him getting to a 8-win season, a 9-win season to get a little bit off of his ass. But I don't know about you. I feel a little bit wonky about this.
Do you think Vanderbilt knew what they were getting when Hugh Freeze got fired and then Auburn went off? Like, that's what I kind of like. No one knew what they were getting, and Durkin allowed for that to happen. So it allowed for different things to happen. My question is when you look at Ashton Daniels in the system that he's going to run in a much lesser, tougher conference with a better coaching staff, because I still think Norvell is better than Hugh Freeze, I don't think it'll be bad. I just don't think it'll be great either. And here's the problem that I have. The problem that I have with Ashton Daniels getting the nod, not that he hasn't, you know, I'm not going to say that he hasn't earned it and that you weren't going to name him the starter anyway.
Yeah.
My problem with him is why didn't you keep it an open competition? Was it that big? Was Sperry or Malachi Marshall that you brought in, was it that big of a deal? Like, was it that big of a separation? Because if it was, I don't mind it. But I don't like when coaches do it too early, because I feel like they get pressured into it. That's my problem that I have with this. It's like, I don't think Ashton Daniels is a bad quarterback. I mean, the truth of the matter is, Joe, I don't think we've been able to see him at a ceiling, because he was at freaking Stanford, and then he was at Auburn with Hugh Freeze, who stunk. And then when he got fired, the offense actually had a pulse. I mean, Joe, look what they did with Bama. I mean, it wasn't just Vandy. They had Bama on the ropes in back-to-back weeks. They did it to one playoff team and another one that almost got there. So now you want to tell me that the kid can't play? I think he's good. But it gets to a point where I do question, why couldn't you just let the competition go on? Why did you think at the end of spring you needed to make a statement now? So, with that part being said, did you need to do it because of your locker room? Did you need a leader and need to establish something? Is your culture that fractured? Because if it is, and Ashton Daniels coming in and doing that, it tells me more about them than anything. But you brought him in for a reason. They spent the money on him for a reason, and so I guess we'll see.
I think that last part is probably the way that I'm looking at it, is there probably was a degree of some sort of a commitment that as long as you look prepared, we're going to turn to you and we'll announce you as the starter at the end of the spring. Maybe it was something in that regard, but having a leader at the end of the spring is always positive. Having a guy who can go into summer workouts and can lead the group and you're not disjointed is always going to be better for your program. But I do think you bring up a good point. When you have been as bad as you've been over the past couple of years and as underwhelming, why not allow for open competition to occur as the overall mentality of, you know, everything hasn't been good enough. Everybody is competing. We're going to compete throughout the entirety of camp. Like, everybody's fighting to get onto the field. I don't know what the culture is like in the building. That's what we're going to kind of find out.
We know what the culture is.
I will say it is interesting, and I was reminded of this when I was reading through just other tidbits with this, that one of his first games is going to be against Alabama, and one of his games that he started last year, and he had a decent performance against Alabama last year when he was at Auburn. So some familiarity. I wonder if that helps. I wonder if that helps him play well against Alabama.
Well, you hired an underling, okay, of Malzahn, and you got a brand new play caller. This isn't going to go over well. This is not going to go over well. I'm sorry. It's not going to go over well. I don't know what you want me to say. I don't know what you want me to say. I like Ashton Daniels for what it's worth, and I like Wisner. Now, here's the real question in reference to this. You brought in Pabst, you brought in Joyner, you brought in Bowling, you brought in Chaplin. Can that offensive line do anything? Because if they are and they can run the ball effectively, that will take so much pressure off of him. Maybe, right? Like, maybe it does.
I'd imagine he'd be a key piece in the run game because Daniels is a really, really good athlete. My biggest thing with Daniels just in general is I really wondered what he would have looked like if he had been the starter over Jackson Arnold at the start of the season. Like, would we be talking about Auburn?
They would have beat Oklahoma. They would have 1,000% beat Oklahoma.
Not a ridiculous
premise. No, it's not. Jackson Arnold legitimately got sacked 10 times. Pause. Auburn had just the same amount of talent on the field as anybody they played. We do realize that, right? Joe, their defense. They should have beaten Oklahoma. I mean, how many games did they get in that they – you want me to be completely truthful? They might have beaten A&M. They could have beaten two playoff teams last year in the SEC if Ashton Daniels was the starting quarterback instead of Jackson Arnold.
Well, so then maybe we should be looking at Ashton Daniels more favorably for this upcoming year because he'll be facing an easier schedule. I think that the whole point is that the kid has potential. Hold on
now. That was a top 10 defense now. Hold on now. That defense for Auburn was insanely good.
Yeah, that's a good point. This Florida State defense is not even close to his
guy. Shit, no. It's not. All right. Do we have any super chats here?
No.
They don't like us anymore.
Sure.
Yes. Uno, that Auburn defense was insane. Hot take. No one, I'm probably going to be in the minority. They were a top five defense last year. Statistically, you can't point it out because how bad they were offensively. But I think that they were a top five defense.
I can't just say that without like thinking back on who they were top 10. I wouldn't say that they had a lot of really good dudes, and there's a bunch of dudes coming back.
Like they had the same level of dudes of like Indiana, Miami, Notre Dame. I mean, Joe, they were one of the best defenses in the country. But you know what is so ironic? What's so ironic here? Is Florida and Auburn recruited at such a high level but had such shit head coaches that you couldn't see them at their full tilt?
And one thing that when we do the Auburn preview that we'll probably talk about with that in mind is that Durkin came back as the DC. So we might be talking about Auburn more favorably than we talked about Florida here. Yeah. I do think that Auburn's interesting if Byron Brown doesn't throw hoagies over the middle of the field. Yeah.
All right. We'll see y'all soon. Y'all have a blessed night. Peace out, Girl Scouts.
Are you ready, kids? The SpongeBob SquarePants merchandise is here. And we're talking officially licensed, as seen on apparel and products at the official Paramount shop. Featuring inclusive sizing and gear for fans of all ages. From premium apparel to must-have accessories, head to ParamountShop.com/SpongeBob and use code PODCAST20 to get 20% off. That's PODCAST20 at ParamountShop.com/SpongeBob. Don't be a Squidward. Grab your gear today.